everyone. Welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we're watching the movies that you recommend to us. I, as always, am your host, John, and with me, also as always, my co-host, Jeff.
Yes, I am also here.
Good. And this time around, we rolled up the Kung Fu classic, Circle of Iron.
I wouldn't even say it's Kung Fu, exactly.
I mean, it's fucking, it's martial
it's
arts.
Something.
It's definitely something.
Yeah, man, this was, you know, I was warning you, I was having a bad couple of days there, and I was ultra tired, and I was like, don't make me watch a Kung Fu movie. I'm going to fall asleep. 70s Kung Fu movies never keep me going.
Oh, yeah.
And luckily, this isn't that. This is something else entirely.
Yeah. So this, I mean, the movie even starts out with going like, hey, so Bruce Lee, before he died, thought, hey, I should write a movie that combines my love of Zen and martial arts, and then I can introduce people to it. But then he died, and we made this instead.
Yeah, apparently he was friends with some of the people who are still in or had made this movie and had been planning to make it for quite a number of years. But then he died, and 5 years later they were like, well, we still have this idea. What if we cast all white guys?
Yeah, it's definitely something when you go into this and you're like, so all of the main characters, the important people, are just white guys, and then there are a bunch of martial artists, and you're like, oh, you can be whatever, that's fine. But our main people need to be white guys.
Yeah, definitely, and very, very mid-70s white guys, where they're all, like, way too assured of themselves, and I think the problem with this movie is it tries to explain Zen philosophy through, like, the kind of guy that would star in Planet of the Apes.
Ah!
Where instead of, like, understanding anything, he's just like, I don't need to understand nothing. I've got muscles and I'm a man.
Yeah, it's especially bad when you're going through this movie and the whole point is supposed to be like, ah, yes, this character goes through and learns all of these lessons about, you know, Zen Buddhism. But honestly, the whole time he's just like, ha ha, fuck you.
Yeah, no, He learns nothing the entire time.
It's fabulous, and I love it.
Also, the actor who played him is, like, not even on Wikipedia. I don't know where they found him, and I don't know where he went.
Yeah, Jeff Cooper, who, God, he just looks like he should be a stand-in for, like, any given 70s or 80s corporate bad guy, but...
Yeah, yeah. He's in a billion things. He was a working Canadian actor. He died in 2018. But yeah, he worked for quite. He was in Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
like the old TV show,
mm-hmm.
and so on. But yeah, just a. I honestly thought he was like a lesser star from Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, he is. I mean, his role in this is basically just guy with muscles.
Yeah, aggressively unlikable.
So, I mean, no spoilers or anything for this, but God, this movie is, I don't exactly know who it's for, because like you said, it's not like this is, if you're someone who's like, oh, I love, like, 70s Kung Fu movies, I love the old Kung Fu stuff, like, oh, it's not really that, like, you'll get some fights, I guess, but man, it's mostly just like a lucid dream that you're like, okay, sure, I guess.
Yeah, effectively, I mean, we've seen a movie exactly like this before, and it was Zardoz. The closest thing you can say to this movie is that it's basically another Zardoz type of thing, where you've got your main character, it's obviously a passion project. The main character is like a self-assured, shirtless muscle man who goes where he pleases and fucks where he goes, and yet somehow is supposed to be like an enlightened person.
Yeah, I don't know. It's watching this movie, I was like, I'm not entertained. It's interesting, but in the same way that like watching a bug is sort of interesting, in that you're like, yeah, this is neat to sort of watch, but I don't want to just keep watching this.
The one thing I would say, having watched it, is that I am fairly certain I can tell you at least one other person who has definitely seen this movie and probably liked it more than both of us, and that was Quentin Tarantino.
Ah.
Because of the amount of David Carradine playing a big flute in this, I was like, oh, that's where they decided. Okay, that's got it.
Yeah, so you know what? We're going to go ahead, play a little music. We are going to come back and do the full in-depth super spoiler review for Circle of Iron.
I don't need to walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles.
Right, we are back and ready to start talking about the Circle of Iron, which doesn't get mentioned. There's no Circle of Iron in this. I don't know what that's referencing, but, you know, maybe it's a Buddhist thing. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure where that came from either, but it's not the only name the movie has. It was also known as The Silent Flute, which that one at least makes sense because towards the end of the movie, we learn... There was no way we would have known this prior, that there's a flute in the movie, but only one guy can hear that flute, which is the main guy. And apparently no one else can hear that flute.
That was the weirdest reveal at that point, where I'm like, okay, it is the end of the movie, and David Carradine has been playing a giant bamboo staff that is also a flute for this entire time, and like, Cord, our main character, just goes, ah, yes, that guy has a flute, and only I can hear it. I'm like, what? What the fuck?
And I don't even know if it's true or if it's just a statement. He's another like Zen philosophy thing he's trying to say. The movie opens with a big full screen, almost like apology for what you're about to see. Where it's just like, hey, look, this is the deal. Bruce Lee really wanted to make this movie. It may not make any sense to you, but that's because you don't know anything about Zen philosophy, you plebeian.
I love that they basically just use this for like, Bruce Lee wanted to make this movie, and it's, you know, his passion and his project, and so he's dead, and you can't say that it's bad because Bruce Lee's good, so you're not allowed to say anything bad about this.
Please associate this movie with Bruce Lee. Please, for the love of God. Give us, like, Bruce Lee money. Thank you. Anyway, go ahead.
The fact that this movie, I feel like you can very much... get a sense of what this movie is from the opening scene, where it is a martial arts tournament and everyone's just sort of a glistening martial arts badass, except for our main character, who is within the context of the universe a martial arts badass, but
as an actor, not. Yeah, that's an ongoing recurring theme throughout this movie. There's a lot of scenes where our character comes to places where he has to participate in trials. And the way that they establish it's a trial is he'll get there, and there'll be some other guy, big muscly beef man there, who's like, I am here to fight. And then, you know, he fights, and we get to watch a martial arts fight. And then it's our hero's turn to fight, and he can't do martial arts. So instead, we move into short editing, where it's just a bunch of arm shots and quick-moving legs and him going, yar!
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And,
I mean,
Dah!
We get like, Morthon, fight Pelele, and, you know, two martial artists come out and we get, you know, long shots of them doing actual moves and fighting, and it's very interesting. But then as soon as they're like, Cord, he comes in and they're like, I will punch, and then it just sort of zooms in and shows a fist hitting a guy, and you're like, okay, well, that's
no,
good.
I get it, and I appreciate that you've decided to do the movie in such a fashion that there are some kung fu fights, just not featuring this beefcake mullet man who I do not want to watch anyway.
And I cannot understand. I mean, David Carradine is in this throughout the entire thing as like four different characters.
Yep.
And you have all of these martial arts people in there in the background or just, you know, for one scene. And I just kept going, how could you not have gotten anyone else that knows what the fuck they're doing? Like, why would you pick Jeff Cooper, non-martial artist, to be like, this is the dude we want in our Bruce Lee-inspired movie?
Well, my understanding is that the role that Jeff Cooper plays in the movie was not actually intended to be the role that Bruce Lee would play. That they were going to have someone play... that Bruce Lee wanted the David Carradine role.
Yeah, I assume that would be the case.
Yeah, he wanted to be the enigmatic Zen monk who wanders the world teaching sideways lessons and also plays like three other characters, and that this main character could be just about anybody because there's supposed to be someone who's there to learn. But I got to assume that if Bruce Lee made this, the main character wouldn't be this just smug about everything. Like, the idea is that this guy's supposed to be out learning the ways of Zen mastery, and he obviously does not want to and refuses to.
It's really interesting to me as well, because, like, at least in the starting bit of it, I can understand being like, okay, we want the character core to be kind of a jackass and, you know, too self-assured and too much into his own prowess and whatnot. And, you know, then he has to find the Zen master who's like, you know nothing, and now you must clear your mind and relearn all that you know. But he never changes, and it's very weird.
There's a point where he basically gets kicked out of Zen master school because the guy's like, look, maybe community Zen college isn't right for you. Have you considered a trade school? You're just not a good fit for this program. I'm sorry. But we also have in the intro, it says that this doesn't take place on Earth, but rather in a land that never was and yet always has been.
Yeah, which means vaguely someplace.
Yeah, it just means, like, don't worry about it. It's not a historical setting. That's why there's everybody. We keep doing all this Asian philosophy stuff and Asian buildings and clothing and so on, but it's all white guys. That's why you don't have to worry about it, is because it's on a faraway planet.
Yeah,
another time.
This is a setting where basically Conan the Barbarian decides to run off and be a martial artist and study Zen, because, like, the beginning martial arts tournament here, which is judged by Roddy McDowell.
Yeah, that's one of our big names in this movie.
Hell yeah, I fucking love Roddy McDowell.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Roddy McDowell too, but he's also the star of Shock Ma.
Oh,
he did a lot of projects for a dollar.
Whatever, Rowdy Roddy McDowell can do no wrong.
That's fair.
And in this one, you know, they have the tournament and it gets, of course, cored to the end. And, oh, he breaks the rules because he hit the opponent after he was already down. So he gets disqualified, even though he's a bigger badass.
Yeah. And of course, he objects. Roddy McDowell, by the way, one thing I'll give him credit for. He's a guy who never said no to a project, but you can tell that in his heart of hearts, he knows if the product's any good or not. Because in Shock Ma, he does the entire thing seated with a fucking walkie-talkie. And in this movie, he could not look more bored.
And, you know, in one part of me, I'm like, yeah, maybe that's just, you know, a choice for the character. That's a character choice where you're like, ah, yes, he'll say everything in as bored a tone as possible. But then as well, you can also be like, probably he was just like, yes, okay, I will sit in this dumbass chair in a white robe and be like, Pelele wins.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit. But Korn immediately picks a fight about losing, where they're like, hey, you've definitely been disqualified for attacking a man on the ground, and he's like, yes, but Morthond was a dancer. I am a fighter. I deserve to win and see Zeton and his secret book of enlightenment, which, by the way, is the MacGuffin of the film.
Yeah, we get our entire driving idea here. We never really get a full background on what this place Cord is coming from is all about, but it seems like there are a bunch of tribes out there that, like, will occasionally send someone to try and seek out Zeton because they heard that he has a book that has, like, all the knowledge of the universe. And so everyone wants them to go find him, beat him up, and then bring the book back. And
yeah,
Cord's like, oh, you know, no one you've ever sent has been able to do that, but it's because you keep sending prissy babies like Morthond. You should send me a muscle boy. And they're like, no.
I mean, ultimately, I don't understand why he needs permission to go look for Zeton anyway. Like, we find out that all kinds of people are sending martial artists out on trial runs to try and find this Zeton guy all the time. And dozens of people show up on Zeton's home country every year who succeed. So really, it feels like he's hamstringing himself at all by bothering with this stupid martial arts tournament instead of just walking in the direction that he assumes Zeton is in.
I mean, the one thing I noticed is everyone who is on a mission to do this has, like, a medallion that sort of denotes them as, like, an official person trying to find Z-Tan. And, you know, spoiler, Morthon dies. And when he does, Cord, who followed after him, is like, oh, well, I guess I'll get your fucking medallion now so I can, I don't know, look legit.
But he loses it right away, and it's not on him in the rest of the, almost the rest.
No, like, it he is. Doesn't have he it has he it the there. Entire movie.
Does he have it when he gets there? I thought he didn't.
No, he does the whole time.
Okay. So anyway, after losing to Morthon on a technicality, but technically beating Morthon's ass by ignoring the rules like a man, he just decides to fucking follow Morthon because Morthon's going to Z-Tan, so obviously he could just get to Z-Tan that way.
I don't know what the deal with, like, okay, we need you to go get Z-Tan and this book is for these people. Like, do they want to be enlightened as well? Or it's so weird to me that the beginning of this and the whole MacGuffin of, like, you need to go seek out this, what we assume to be master martial artist and his super book is, and you gotta go do that. And he's like, okay, sure. That sounds great. I don't know why, but I need to do this.
Yeah, it's true. I don't understand what Morthon's hoping to get out of it. Every character but Cord and David Carradine, when he's in the monk outfit, don't have any kind of motivations or stated intent or anything. So we have absolutely no idea why Morthon feels driven to fulfill this task.
Yeah, I don't even, like, Cord keeps saying that he just wants this book, and never really says why. He's like, he's got an important book and I want it. That's okay. Like, for what? He's like, well, it's important and it's got knowledge. All right, man, sure.
Are there no other books that have knowledge? I the world feels very spare. It feels as if only, like, 100 people. So maybe that's why it's like, I want to see the only book there is.
I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
But
so he follows Morthon. And weirdly, he just sort of walks along behind him. Granted, he insulted Morthon to his face in the martial arts tournament, but he doesn't say anything to him. He just follows him. And then at a certain point, Morthon, out on some beach somewhere, turns around and is like, I have followed a vow of silence I've made a vow of silence and you are so annoying. And he's like, well, when did you break your vow of silence? Right now, because of how annoying you are. And that's when I realized that one of the things that they made a change to after Bruce Lee died was decided that a lot of the violent scenes in the movie should instead be funny. That's an ongoing thing, that there's comedy in this movie, and it's awful. It would have been so much better if they had just kept it violent.
I mean, at this point, though, when Morthon's like, fucking fight me, just quit following me. If you want to fight me, let's fight. I'll fucking take you down. I don't care. You think you're better than me. And, you know, at least to Cord's credit, he's like, I don't want to fight you. I'm just going in the same direction as you because I want to find Z-Tan. I don't give a shit about you.
I don't wish to kill you. I just want to get to Z-Tan. And, you know, poor Morthon, who won fair and square, is just like, God, whatever. Okay, but I'm not going to talk to you. So, they make it to some outcropping near a temple, or in an abandoned temple, and this monk dude, who Cord has seen once before, and it's David Carradine playing four different roles in the movie, but his main one is the blind monk with a flute staff and a bell on his toe.
Yeah, so that when he fights, he can make a little ding-a-ling noise, and when he spins his staff around, it whistles.
Mm-hmm. So he can just be all kinds of noisies. He goes walking past them. This is the second time he's just sort of wandered by, and Cord takes very strong notice. Weirdly, it's very clear that Morthon sees him too, but he goes off into the temple, and then they hear the sound of violence. And Cord, because he is rugged, is like, I need to know what that is. And Morthon, because he's smart, is like, oh, fuck, sweet. A chance to get away from this mulleted burl dude who keeps following me around.
And, you know, the blind monk is absolutely clowning on a whole bunch of bandits. Like, just...
Yeah, there's no shortage of bandits.
No, just surrounded by a bunch of dudes who want to beat the shit out of him, and he just beats the shit out of all of them. And Cord the whole time is like, wow, that's rad. I love it. maybe this guy is Z-Tan.
Yeah. I love his general assumption that almost everyone he meets is probably Z-Tan. Again, a strong creed or a bit of evidence towards the fact that there's only like 100 people.
I just, every time Cord meets a martial artist that displays any amount of prowess, he's like, hey, you Z-Tan? Hey,
you must be Z-Tan.
You holding Z-Tan?
And they're always like, I'm not stupid. You just think I'm Z-Tan because you never met a strong guy. But this time, you know, he watches as the monk, because he doesn't have a name, dispatches just bandit after bandit after bandit after bandit. And then eventually, right as the fight is obviously over, he pulls out and throws a ninja star to kill a bandit when it's very clear that Carradine has just been knocking them out or putting them on the ground. But he just puts a ninja star right into one's head. And he's like, ha ha, you must be Z-Tan. You will teach me and I will learn from you. And the monk's like, what? No, that's not happening.
I mean, I do enjoy that. I mean, at this point, basically, the monk disappears and he finds him the next day and is like, hey, you Z-Tan, I am whatever you say that I am. I'm doing some Jesus proverb shit here.
He's, I think, like, my favorite part of that is he goes, yeah, whatever you say I am or think I am or imply I am, I am. And then Cord goes, you shall be my teacher. No. I was like, but you said he would. You said you would. You said you'd be whatever I said you are. Yeah, but not that.
I will follow you and then learn from you. Ah, but if you get two birds and tie them together, they have four wings but cannot fly. All right, man. Okay.
Yeah, but what if you started with two birds that already couldn't fly? Like, if you tie two penguins together, then they have four wings and can't fly. But who cares? They couldn't fly in the first place. What do you think of that?
Well, they can't swim now either.
Well, they couldn't before. These two penguins in particular couldn't swim. I forgot to mention that in the proverb. It's an important part of the proverb. Two swimless penguins.
Swimless penguins.
New Swimless Penguins by, I don't know, Speedo.
Oh.
Okay.
But they,
anyway, yeah.
I mean, they travel on, and Cord, of course, follows after the monk, and the monk is just sort of making fun of him and being like, oh my god, you are just the most annoying, shitty human. And he's like, haha, I know. And
well, yeah. One thing he wants out of life is for people around him to be the fuck quiet. And Cord's like, I shall talk just nonstop. Constantly, I am yammering away.
Well, yeah, because they have to do a comedy thing where he's like, ah, you must be silent. And he's like, oh, of course, I will rip out my own tongue. You'll never hear me talk. Not one more time. Why, I can be as quiet as anyone. And you're like, oh, okay, I get it. I get the joke.
Yeah, it's one of the two jokes.
He's going to keep
you.
Talking.
Yeah. Foghorn Leghorn did this bit in the 40s. What's your excuse?
And then they run across. I don't know if in the movie this is supposed to be an actual monkey or what it clearly is, which is just a person in the worst monkey mask.
Another little thing that reminds you of Planet of the Apes to no end.
And the monkey just, like, hoots and hollers and dances around Carradine, who just keeps spinning to look at it and not doing anything. And eventually the monkey just sort of gets bored and leaves. And that's when we get our big, like, first lesson for Cord, which is that you probably shouldn't turn your back on people. And you're like, ah, good. What an amazing kung fu lesson. Don't let a dude get behind you. Amazing.
Yeah, well, the lesson is spoken in the form of the monkey plays the fool so as to lure you in. If you deny him his opportunity to play you as fools, you will reveal him for what he is truly, a coward dressed as a monkey.
Yes. When he will get behind you and bite your ankles while you laugh at his antics. And you're like, all right, but like,
okay,
I wouldn't, because if a monkey's like coming at me, I'm not going to be like, oh, tee hee, what a monkey. I'm going to go, oh shit, that thing's going to murder me.
I laugh at your monkeyish ways, monkey.
Ow, my ankles.
Anyway, at this point, the two of them sort of split off in their separate ways once again. And Cord heads into Monkey Temple for the first monkey fight, or the trial of the monkey.
Well, yeah, because he has to find Morthon, who just lost to the monkey guy, and he's dying. So then he gets to take the amulet and be like, cool, now I guess I'll try and fight the first trial, which is this monkey guy who is just David Carradine in a weird monkey mask.
Yeah, and I got, he doesn't just take it away from the dying Morthond. He assists Morthond in dramatic suicide.
Well, yeah, he has to die with honor, so he needs to help him commit seppuku.
Yeah, he actually does the seppuku, like, knife in, sideways, down, cut thing. So that's fun. But yeah, then we go into a big room where a monkey fight is going to happen. And I think, isn't there already a different guy in there also fighting monkeys?
Yeah, I was going to say, and we get, like every single time this guy is about to fight someone, we get an actual martial artist who is already there and is going to fight, so we can see what it would look like if two competent people were fighting, because mm-hmm. then once Cord gets in there, it will not be that, and they're just like, just fill in with your imagination what they should be.
Yeah, pretend this fight looked cool, because it won't.
We're going to do a bunch of cuts, and like, you'll see someone's leg go flying by, but you're not going to be able to tell what's happening.
Anyway, this is our first chance to get a really strong look at Cord's philosophy, because after the Monkey King defeats the other guy, some dude who was in there with like a three-section staff, Cord is like, I wish to fight you, monkey. And the monkey, you know, just Carradine just launches into a series of like questions and insults.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he shows up and he's like, hey, where's your begging bowl? You beggar? Huh? Fuck you, buddy. And
hey, fuck you, monkey.
Like, the fact that Cord is essentially, at this point, we find out, just doing whatever the fuck, because Monkey Man's like, hey, so what school are you from? Like, what
my
type of
school.
Martial arts?
No, my but like, martial arts.
Who taught you?
Myself.
What the shit? My shit.
Yeah, basically, the primary thing you have to take away from Cord is that he is so aggressively self-aggrandizing and pompous that he can't even acknowledge what kind of fighting style he has. He's like, I do Cord Fu.
Yeah, and that will not change. He's just like, oh no, I am my own person and I need no one and I come from no one. Which is great, because then the Monkey Man's like, oh, good, you don't even have a mom. That's amazing.
Well, what are you doing here, motherless man? And obviously, he shoots down all the insults, because if you don't take the monkey's bait, then the monkey will reveal himself a coward in the costume of a monkey.
Yeah. And I will say this, I do like that Cord, at least, every time he comes up against one of these trials, he at least is like, I don't want to fight you. If you just tell me where Zetan is or the next trial is or whatever, I will just leave you alone. Monkey Man, I don't have to fight you. I can walk around you. We don't need to do this. And, you know, Monkey Man's like, nah, the hell we don't.
Yeah, he's like, well, you have to walk around me. And I'm going to tell you right now, you don't get to.
You got to go through me, buddy.
Now, unfortunately, the whole thing where we have to learn a lesson to, like, not let the monkey get behind you or whatever ends up not being part of the movie, really, because the fight that they obviously eventually have is a very straightforward, poorly edited martial arts fight. The monkey doesn't really do any monkey stuff.
No, and there wasn't anything where it was like, oh, he manages to get the monkey guy, like, off balance because he's not rising to his bait, or, you know, he manages to, like, I don't know, one of the insults and he like turns it back on. There was no real interaction here where you're like, ah, he learned a lesson about the monkey from the monk. It was just, all right, the blind man, I guess, told him about monkeys and then it didn't matter and he fought a guy dressed as a monkey.
Yeah, like, I imagine if he had been a real martial artist kind of guy, then they probably could have worked it into the storyline with the fight, because you could have the Monkey Man circling him or doing feints or something like that that are very specific, but we can't do that because our hero can't throw a kick. And so instead, it's just a badly edited fight where, like most of the fights he gets involved in, it's just two guys circling around each other warily doing hand kata.
Yeah, until it is time to, you know, get a close-up of a fist or a leg going into someone's face or whatever, where you don't have to see them doing the actual move to get there.
Yeah, and then eventually he manages to beat the monkey, kind of. It's not like he kills him or anything. It's just like at a certain point, the fight's done.
Well, yeah, he beats him up, and he needs to leave him alive because the monkey needs to tell him where the next trial is.
Yeah, and the monkey's like, okay, fine, what do you want? He's like, tell me where Zetan is. Fine, here's a cryptic thing. go wandering into the wilderness and find a rose. There you go. That's your next step. Whatever.
Yeah.
Great. How many
Follow
people have come?
Follow the western wind.
Yeah. How many people have come before me? I that's not my job. My job is to tell you where the Z-Tan is. And I was like, that's great. Good on you, monkey. Don't give an inch. This guy's a fuck.
I mean, he still does. He's like, well, you're the first one to get past me. But, you know, everyone has their own trials to get through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he eventually gives up a little, which is kind of a bummer. But then our hero basically is like, I own you, monkey. It's just like this. Again, I'm not sure what the lesson was supposed to be, where he's like, ha ha, begging bowl. I put you in my begging bowl, you filthy ape. And then he just walks out laughing. He walks out laughing of a lot of scenes.
Yeah. Every time I'm like, God, I want this guy to get the shit kicked out of him so he can learn a lesson about it. But he never does. And every time he's like, well, I thought I was amazing. And then I was. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. And this is also one of our earlier introductions to what the movie more or less charitably calls martial arts movie music. I don't know if this is just because it was made in 78 when wizards were a big deal or what, but all of the movie music in this is like the kind of shit that you thought they would actually be playing in a safety dance video.
Ah.
You know, it's all just like the like Mummer's Parade music. It's just wizard shit.
It's just wizard shit.
It just sounds like Monty Python B-roll. I don't know how, it's such a disconnect from the things we're seeing, which is, you know, a whole bunch of people trying to teach each other Eastern lessons while wandering around in cool rocks. And then every time the music comes up, it's just like, doot, doot, doodle-oodle, doot, doot, doodle-oodle, ha-ha, the wizard. And you're like, what the fuck is this?
So, anyway.
Please take it.
Yeah, so
take it and run.
Fucks off to the wilderness, which turns out to just sort of be a desert somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and comes across a dude who is in a giant barrel of oil.
No, right, Eli Wallach.
Yeah, Eli Wallach is, you know, in a tub of oil, and Cord's like, hey, you want me to help you out? Someone torturing you by putting you into this barrel of oil? And he's like, no, I put myself in here. I am trying to wither away the bottom half of me until it is gone.
And once again, I could see this as a powerful lesson in Zen philosophy if it wasn't in a like borscht belt comedian doing the whole thing as jokes about how his wife is going to be happier now.
It's interesting as well, because you're like, all right, you're doing jokes about like, hey, look at my dick. Is it still there? Nope. Great. I love it.
Ah, your dick is but a pimple now.
Ah, good. Hopefully it'll be gone soon. You're like, okay, this is weird. But, you know, he's like, oh, at one point I was, you know, I meditated and I went without food or water. I barely had scant anything and I became one with the universe. And then my dick was like, hey, buddy, what about me? And so I'm trying to get rid of it so I can actually be, you know, pure of mind, dedicate myself to whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. And then they're like, and also my legs are in cahoots with my dick, so they gotta go.
So, you know, fuck them. They walk this thing around. And I'm like, all right, whatever. That's fine. Okay. Sure.
Of course, he doesn't call it a dick. It's this horrible thing between my legs is the and I think my favorite thing about this scene, and this scene's real weird. Again, it would make sense as sort of a strong Zen lesson if it was played straight, but it's not. It's played as like this dude doing like Appalachian humor. He's like, ha, my wife, she's gonna miss my dick until she remembers how much my dick sucked. Na-da-da-da-da. And he's just like, this is stupid. Why? But the thing is, Cord won't let this guy have an inch. Where he's just I tried swearing a vow of chastity. I have also sworn a vow of chastity, and I am holding to it well.
Well, like, the guy in the oil is like, you can swear 10, 100 vows. It doesn't matter. Always this horrible thing between my legs is like, yeah, let's have boner times.
I did swear 101 vows of chastity. What do you think of that, oil guy?
I
think you're the worst, Cord.
It was one of those things where, because the last thing from the monkey guy was like, oh, go through the desert until you find a rose. And then he meets a guy who's talking about how, you know, your penis will lead you astray. I was like, okay, so the next challenge obviously has to be a, you know, a sexy lady and you've got to not fuck her.
Yeah,
and
perhaps some sort of desert rose. Hade Mata Toilia, however that line.
And indeed it is, like, you know, he goes to the next place, and of course the next trial is a hot lady that wants to fuck him, and he is just like, yes, obviously, let's
oh my
do
God.
This.
It's hilarious, because we don't hear about this guy's vow of chastity, or why he has one, or anything. Again, Cord taught himself martial arts, he's fighting in his own style, he is beholden to no tribe, he is his own man, but at some point he was like, I shall fuck no more. And you're like, why? What did you do that for?
And
it doesn't matter.
In the narrative of the movie, it was only a year ago. So he just decided a year ago, he's like, you know what? Vow of chastity. That sounds like a thing I'd do.
And this guy looks like he's like 40. So that's kind of a weird choice to be like, and I'm done with this.
But
until the first available opportunity.
But yeah, the camp that he comes to is, you know, a 70s style orgy camp that is run by David Carradine as Changsha. And
playing a moving on from monkey stereotype to Arabian stereotype.
Yeah, he is the great tempter sultan or whatever of this place. And, you know, again, there's some other guy who's there, just a big, muscly black guy. And the two of them have a fight and they're like, yeah, let's watch these two guys fight. They know what they're doing. And Cord's like, cool, when do we fight? And he's like, oh, we'll fight in the morning, but first, why don't you get some sleep and fuck my ninth wife?
Right, who we've already been introduced to. She's just wearing the kind of fake hijab that never existed outside of people's wild Orientalist fantasies in, like, 18th century England.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very much the, like, ooh, I'm doing some Dance of the Veils type shit right now. And you're like, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and also everybody in this camp is like a ludicrous drunk or just a bikini lady, and they're all constantly dancing, and there's always a band playing for all the fights. It's very 70s style goofy.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's always people hump dancing.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is supposed to be like hedonism camp.
Yeah. So this dude, Cord goes into his tent and goes to bed. And it's like within a second, the woman comes in and she's like, very verily, sir, I shall thrice lay thee. And he's like, well, maybe if I saw your tits. Indeed. Okay, I guess we're doing this. Vow of chastity out the window.
And it's especially bad because Cord, like, right off the bat goes, oh, wait a minute. It's not the fight. You're my second test. And so he knows before they've even started doing anything. He's like, oh, you're the second test. And then he's like, but you did show me your boobies. So I guess fuck it. I'll just fail this test and my vow. Meh.
Yeah. Or perhaps he's just like arrogant and, you know, 70s man enough to be like, obviously that means the test is to fuck good. If I fuck good enough and hard enough, I'll find my way to Z-Tan.
But Cord breaks his vow, and indeed they do lay with each other. And then he's like, you should come with me and, you know, be my wife because, you know, you're the first person I've had sex with in so long. And I just want
year.
It so bad.
It's been like a year.
Well, it's been a year since his vow. We don't know That's how true. Long it's been.
Yeah, it could have been like 6 months, and then he got all incel about it.
Oh.
He's like, man, it's hard to find a date in this town. You know what? Women, dead to me.
And indeed, the next morning, she is dead to him.
Yeah, because she was crucified by Changsha for, is this the way of saying he failed the test, or the way of saying you fucked my wife?
You fucked my wife?
Yes, I fucked your wife, and you told me to fuck your wife.
It's very weird, because he wakes up, and of course, oh, the whole camp is gone, like it was never there, and the only thing left is, like, not your standard crucifixion, but like the X crucifixion, and...
Well, it's the kind where you don't actually have to hurt anybody, because she has, like, a pole to sit on.
Yeah, well, she's strapped to an X rather than a T.
Yes, that is true. But there's also a pole sticking out from the center of the X for her to kind of like straddle. So they don't have to actually tie her up or put her weight on anything dangerous. It's a very, very, it took until he was walking away and explaining it to someone else where I was like, oh, she's supposed to be dead. Okay. I thought she was like alive, but as a message. I got it.
I did have that same thing, because there's not a mark on her, and she's just sort of, you know, forgive
sitting
the pun,
something.
Hanging out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is like a, hey, fuck you, you failed message or something? I don't know, but I guess she's
sure.
dead.
What do you think would have happened if he hadn't, like, because basically she comes in and she's like, let me read your palm. And he's like, all right, you can read my palm. And she starts just, like, licking his hand a bunch, and he's like, what the hell is this? You must be the test. And she's like, indeed, and here's my tits and vagina. And he's like, let's go take a bath together then. So... ultimately what happens after all this is he starts yelling Changsha a bunch in the desert, goes off for a run, runs into the monk, and the monk's like, tell me what's been up. And he's like, I had a vow of chastity, and then I broke it because I realized that, I don't know, love is not a thing I have to... Look, don't make me defend this. I saw tits.
Yeah, he tries to be like, philosophy, I have realized that love is not a thing to be denied, but if you try and hold love too tightly, then you can risk killing the thing you love?
Yeah,
David Carradine's just like, yeah, sure, buddy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm glad you learned a valuable lesson. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's very sad that you had to learn a lesson, you know, and she died.
Yeah, but you learned something, right? I learned not to have a vow of chastity.
That's I learned it's okay to bone down whatever you want. Okay, well, lesson learned, I guess.
This is insulting that this woman who is his test is murdered for sleeping with him, and then he goes off and befriends her murderer, and the murderer is like, but aren't you mad at me? I killed that woman you slept with. And he's like, no, I killed her by sleeping with her. You're a good friend, Changsha. Let's bro hug. And I'm like, oh, a woman died, you fucks.
I mean, it's weird because, you know, the next time they see each other, he's like, I am not here to fight you in anger. No, I had just as much to do with her death as you did. I'm like, not really. Because he was like, here, you should sleep with this lady. And then I did. And then you killed her. So, I mean, it's not like I knew if I did sleep with her, you would murder her.
It doesn't matter if you guys equally blame yourselves. A lady died. You still did a murder. A murder did be done.
Well, it doesn't matter. They're both white men.
It's just funny how it rationalizes with the two of them fighting each other in yet another crappy edited fight. And then it just, at a certain point, Carradine just kind of smiles and is like, ah, you win the fight. We're friends. And that naked murdered lady, water under the bridge.
Don't even worry about it.
I got dozens of murdered ladies. Let's be pals.
We also get, one of the weirdest.
Well, we skipped
scenes
over the whole fucking.
I was going to say, one of the weirdest things to me is, you know, after he sees the monk again and is like, oh, this lady died and I learned a valuable lesson and I don't care. And they're like, okay, well, I'm about to go somewhere else, and you can only come with me if you promise to not ask questions. And because you're going to see some shit that doesn't make sense, and you're going to jump to conclusions because you have no patience. So if you can follow me and not ask questions, then I'll teach you stuff. And he's like, cool, great, I love it. And then immediately starts asking questions.
Yeah, just instantly, like literally the next scene. And I don't know if that's editing to suggest that this character, that the movie is a joke and that we're not supposed to like the main character because he's a dimwit. I don't know.
But it is one of those things where it's like, we go find a guy that they need to take a boat to somewhere and they take the boat
and I gotta
across.
Say,
and
real quick here, right along with Eli Wallach being the man in oil routine and then this boat keeper and his wife. This movie is, I don't want to say, kind of leaning hard on the Jews.
A
little on the anti-Semitic side, one might say. Because
one might.
Because they get to this place and they're like, hey, how much to cross the river? We don't have money, but I've got a Nakobe or whatever they're called, those little figurines. And the man, the boatkeeper, like the ferryman's like, that'll work. That'll be just fine, my friend. And then his wife's like, how dare you give away anything without some money? And then the two of them get in this very anti-Semitic fight. And it's a comedy sequence because basically they get into a very anti-Semitic fight. And then Carradine and Cooper just steal the boat.
Yeah, they just fuck off with the boat. There's a cut, and then they're, like, rowing away. So there's no, like, we don't know if maybe they gave them something, and they're still fighting.
Well, they're still fighting in the background, yeah.
But they get to wherever they're rowing to, and then Carradine breaks the boat. Like, just kicks the sides of the boat apart, and, immediately Cord's like, well, why the fuck did you do that?
Yeah, and Carradine's like, just keeps walking. He's like, you agreed, dude. You weren't, doesn't say anything, but obviously this is an immediate violation of the you can come with me, but don't ask any fucking questions, Prince, rule.
Oh, yeah. It's so weird, because Cord, every time, it feels like, should have learned something, you know? By now, he should have been like, oh, okay, if I, follow this guy, he said I'm going to see some shit and it's not going to make sense. I know if I start questioning him, he'll be like, it's because of a perfectly good reason, you dummy, you absolute idiot. But instead, yeah, he's like, what are you doing?
What the hell is wrong with you, old man?
You've just ruined that guy's livelihood.
Yeah, and they have a little conversation in the boat where Cord's like, I feel sorry for that man, eternally henpecked by woman. And, the monk's like, oh, no, that guy's in great shape because he's not fearing death anymore.
Happy is the man who does not fear death. And in fact, he must be very happy, for he lies awake at night awaiting it. And you're like, okay, I get it.
That's, again, you guys are being really mean to this lady who just has financial instability concern. where they're like, even the monk who's supposed to be like the good guy in this conversation is just like, oh no, you don't understand, that guy's got such a horrible wife that he can't wait to die. Isn't that great?
Fuck
everybody.
The place they go to has random soldiers that I don't know where they came from or what they're doing, but man, are they angry at anything that they see.
Yeah, they are set to kill anything they come across, and they just come charging out of the wilderness immediately. But the monk senses them before they are sensible and hides in the bushes. But again, because he makes a point of not telling Cooper Cord anything, Cord, he hides in the bushes, and Cord's just like, what are you doing? Hiding? Why? And what are you hiding?
The thing is, if you're Cord and the guy you're following, who you know to be way more of a badass than yours, like, oh, I'm hiding, you'd be like, well, fuck, I should hide too, instead of being like, haha, why hide? I will stand out in the open. Clearly nothing will happen.
Yeah, and I kept expecting the monk to be like, you should also hide, because if you get discovered, so will I, and then I will have to fight. But instead he's just like, I'm going to hide, because it's sensible. And Cord's like, it is not sensible. It is stupid for you to hide. Ha ha ha. Oh, soldiers.
Oh, shit.
Not that it matters. They're just going to clown on the soldiers because they're martial artists. And this is a weird mix of dudes in any kind of cheap Hollywood armor they can afford.
Yeah. I get that they were trying to be like, we're not really trying to make anyone be from any one specific place. So they kind of have just a mishmash of different armor styles from different areas and eras.
It's just like a bunch of Vikings and Mongols and Romans. That's just that. It's just a group of that. So I don't
but
even
like
know if this is
all
be a military
mixed
or,
together.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know
the
how they're
pieces.
Supposed to be a military outfit.
But we get a whole thing where they're running around and basically, Scooby-Doo slapstick beating up bad guys. And one of them jumps over a well and knocks some bricks over. So they will spend part of the time of this, Carradine will be like, oh, I need to start building up this well again.
And you see why. There's a point where right after the horse kicks the wall down, you can see coins glinting in the wall. So they like kicked open the wall and revealed a hidden treasure trove. But again, my favorite part of this is right after the horsemen show up, Carradine just takes off running, and Cord's running along with him like, wait, why are you running? They're just soldiers. Who cares? And he's like, it's hard to kill a horse with a flute.
Yeah, it's a good joke.
It's a good line. But apparently it isn't, because this movie features horsemen forcing their horses to dead-ass run headfirst into each other.
Yeah.
This is not a movie where, I'm pretty sure this is a movie where the ASPCA was not pleased.
I do not think they got the no animals were harmed thing at the end of this.
Yeah.
But
they just evade them for a while.
Yeah, they run around, and again, they, have to stop and rebuild the well, and Cord will not shut up about, like, well, why are we doing this? Why don't you repair their chimney and their roof needs mending too? Meh. And I just cannot stand this guy.
Shut the fuck up, Cord. Might as well have been the third title of this movie.
And then, you know, they manage to evade some soldiers, and then they find a little fishing village where a little pampered boy comes up to them and is like, eh, and puts his hand out, and Carradine slaps the shit out of him.
Yeah, it's a very funny moment. They come to this little tiny fishing town. You can see a bunch of little kids run up and are like, please, sir, coins? Coins for us? Sir, have you coins? And there's one boy who's like being fed something by his parents, and he's like, eh, I don't care for the taste of it. But he just kind of goes, meh, like looks away from the food a little bit. And then he walks up and just snaps his fingers at them. And yeah, like John said, immediately, Carradine's just like, whap, and just like bloodies this kid up bad.
Oh yeah, just breaks this kid's nose. And that is the point where Cord has lost it. And he's like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. You and me, we're done professionally, but I have to know, why did you do all this shit? And it's like, oh, well, I broke the boat, because if I didn't, the soldiers would take the boat and kill the boatman and his wife. So I saved them.
No, well, you didn't save them. Didn't we just have a conversation? Like, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. This is me being reasonable, Cord. You ready? Here we go. Didn't the boatman pray for death? Why did you deny him his most cherished want?
I mean, he did actually even say, I mean, much as the boatman might actually enjoy that.
Okay, and then Cord's like, but how did you know? Did you hear the soldiers coming? No.
Oh,
okay.
And why did we stop to fix that well? It seemed like you were just waiting for assassins to get you. Oh, because there was money there, and if we didn't fix it, the soldiers would have found it and left that poor woman and her children penniless.
Okay, right. I'm going to do actual Cord question. Could you smell the money?
No. I mean, okay. I could probably hear it, though. I don't know why you went to smell on this one.
Because we did hear on the first one, and it's got to be a parable. That's how fucking parables work. Anyway, reasonable Cord question. Why didn't you just take the bag of coins when we were going to go run away and hide? Then you could have brought it back to the people in the house afterwards instead of staying out in the open and fixing a stone wall.
Ah, because, you know, maybe we die, so I have to make sure that it's there for them, even past my own life.
No, okay. Very reasonable.
Yeah, fuck
please
you.
Continue.
And
we can go back and forth, but we've only got 10 minutes left in the episode, so yeah. I don't have time for it.
Why'd you punch that kid? Because he was too goddamn pretty, and I wanted to destroy something beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, Fight Club,
like,
sure.
That kid was going to grow up to be a tyrant, and I stopped him. His parents were slaves to his beauty, and I have denied him his beauty, and I have freed his parents from slavery.
Yeah, I have freed both him and his parents. Now he'll no longer have to worry about his beauty, and neither will anyone else. And you're like, all right, I guess.
Because it's a parable, he has to be like, did you sense the child's beauty in any way?
Yeah, you can't see him, so how did you know he was beautiful?
And this is when we get the big reveal as to how he knew all these secrets. He'd been here already.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I've already been here. Like,
okay, so when
times.
You were here last time, what? Did the soldiers try to get the boat and kill the guy? What are you talking about? You've been here.
Well, no, because last time the boatman dropped me off and then left and took his boat back, but we stole the boat, so I had to break it, obviously.
Look, here's the deal. Every day, those horsemen come running out, hooting and hollering, waving weapons around. They get to the bank of that river, and they're like, oh, man, the boat's on the other side. We've been foiled again. And then I guess they just ride back.
I guess.
Also, last time I came through, some lady was like, hey, mister, I keep my coins hidden in that wall.
Yeah, and also the last time I came through, some fishermen were like, that kid's real pretty and kind of a douche.
Too pretty. A little too pretty. And again, reasonable Cord question. Why the fuck is it any of your business if that kid grows up to be a tyrant? You're taking an awful lot of responsibility for stopping a future you've decided you can predict.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm a mysterious blind monk. Fuck you.
Okay, point taken. Thank you. All my questions have been answered. Now let's split up.
There's a weird scene before we get back to that Changsha thing we were talking about before, where he's like, I don't give a shit, where he faces death, but is just a dream he's having, and death is like a panther or some shit.
Well, it's just David Carradine in a cat costume.
Yeah. David Carradine looks like he jumped out of the cast of Cats and is like, I'm death.
I come for you, Cord. And Cord has to be like, very well, please come for me. I fear no death.
Yeah, you'll come for me in your time, but I will not be scared. All right, what was the point of this? I don't know. It was probably just in the notes for the original movie, and we decided to do it.
Yeah, we couldn't find a way to make it a funny joke at the expense of Hebrew people. So I guess it's just in here.
Anyway, after he meets and beats Changsha meets him for the second time and actually sort of wins the fight.
Yeah, he just keeps fighting and then the fight ends.
At that point, Changsha's like, all right, cool. Well, you proved yourself. Anyway, there's the boat to Zetan. You can go on that now, I guess. I don't know if I was expecting the boat to show up or what, but it's here now.
That boat always shows up. It's going to take you through a tunnel and you're going to see a centipede and a chicken get its head cut off. It's going to be very scary.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, that's a trial too or something. Anyway.
It's definitely a trial. It's a trial, and then right after that, you're going to be tempted to taste the everlasting gobstopper. You must resist the temptations.
I'm Cord, fuck you, I won't.
I shall eat all of your everlasting gobstoppers, Wonka man. A gum that tastes like an entire dinner? Truly a feast fit for Cord.
So Cord makes it to Zetan, and hey, it's Christopher Lee. That's fun.
Yeah, it's Christopher Lee. And I appreciate the way the movie treats this, because he gets all the way out there. Christopher Lee lives on an island of monks, and all the monks have hats, and all of them are very peaceful and friendly. And we get a quick shot of him, Cord arriving on the island and gleefully accepting new clothes. So he's also wearing monk robes.
Yeah.
And then they're like, he's standing there, and they're like, so what do you want here? And he's like, I've come for Zetan. Oh, well, he's right there. That's just one of the monks.
There's Zetan.
He's just one of those monks. And he goes over there, and Zetan's like, ah, welcome. And you know, he's just like, ah, I shall fight you. And Zetan's like, what the fuck is this? What are you doing? Why are you throwing hands?
Because, you know, he reaches out to be like, here, sniff this rose. This island has great perfume for the rose. And he's just like, wah, kung fu. Zetan's like, what?
Huh?
What the fuck are you doing?
I'm confused right now. What are we, you got to assume that most of the guys who make their way to Zetan are like this, though, right?
No, I do not assume anyone who makes it to this island is like Cord. I assume everyone else who made it here learned some fucking lessons along the way.
I mean, to be fair, the basic lessons that he realized was, I have to fight this monkey, I have to watch this lady die, and then I have to fight this sultan, and then I get to go see Cord, or Zetan.
Yeah.
So he did get forced to fight over and over again, so when he finally meets Zetan, I think it's not an unreasonable assumption he's making that he's probably going to have to get another fight.
Yeah, and I mean, he does a couple things where Zetan very harmlessly tries to be friendly, and then he just, you know, throws up a kung fu stance, and eventually they sit down, and he's like, oh, you know, why don't you have some tea? Just hang out and chill. And he's like, oh, why don't we get to the point where you and I throw hands? And Christopher Lee's just like, oh, very well. Follow me.
And he's still not going to fight, because he's just like, I want to fight you for the book. And he's like, okay, well, why don't we go on up to the terrace and we'll start the ritual? What ritual? The ritual that makes you owner of the book.
Yeah, you will be the protector of the book now instead of me. Okay, great. And Cord? I guess his last temptation is to spend his life in harmony. And because Zetan's like, you can become the new guardian of the book, just like me, because I, like you, came here thinking I was, you know, going to be a super badass and get all the knowledge of the world. And then I just decided to be the guardian of the book. You could do that and live here, and everything's peaceful and everything's calm, and you could just hang out.
Notably, he says that he has personally never seen in the book.
Yeah, and
he resisted the temptation.
That's the thing. He's like, oh, most people, you know, come up here and they want to see the book, but, you know, if you're going to be the new keeper of it, then, you know, resist the temptation to look in the book. It holds nothing for you.
Right, and Cord's like, well, that sounds like an important Zen lesson, but I must look in the book.
But I want to, so fuck you.
And I won't suffer any consequences if I do, or it'll be your ass.
And he opens up the book, and it's mirrors. There's a couple pages with mirrors, and it's, what's in the book? It's you. You're all the knowledge in the world.
Hold on. I've been told there's a monster at the end of this book.
Ah, it is I, for I am the monster at the end of this book.
I shall brick up the pages to stop myself from seeing the scary monster. Please excuse. And then basically what we learn more or less is that being Z-Tan kind of sucks. Because Z-Tan's like, ah, finally, you shall take the book, and I will not be the man with the book, and then you will live here in harmony, and I can fuck off, I guess.
Yeah, he's like, oh, please, take my place, take my wife, please, eh!
Oh, but I've learned lessons about taking wives, and I've never learned a lesson in my life. I've known men who learned lessons, and they were all cowards.
Yeah, it's so weird that he's just like, hey, please... please be the guardian of this book. And Cord just laughs and walks away. And then finds David Carradine as the blind monk and is like, hey, man, it turns out that your flute, only I can hear it. And also, I guess now I get to play the flute. And instead of being the new guardian of the book, I get to be the new enigmatic monk? I don't know.
Maybe something. Anyway, why don't you do a silly dance while I play your giant flute perfectly on my first try?
End of story, no lesson.
I'm sure there's lots of lessons, but obviously Cord never learned any of them.
No, the fact that Cord gets to just bumble his dumb ass through this entire movie, suffer no consequences, and learn nothing, essentially the end lesson that he learns is, ah, I'm awesome and everything's cool about me. Good. You're like, that's not don't learn that lesson.
There's a minor moment that we overlooked earlier in the film that I thought was super important and we might as well bring up before we wrap up, which is when Cord is following around behind the monk who has recently told him, you can come with me if you be quiet, and he just keeps rattling on and on about whatever, and finally the monk's like, you know, just not talking, and Cord says, it's like talking to a wall, and Carradine says, you know, Buddha sat down in front of a wall, and when he finally stood up, he was enlightened. Dare you compare yourself to the mighty Buddha?
No.
And, you know,
I compare myself to the wall.
Yeah, and that's a clever line, but it's funny to me that Cord has reverence for the Buddha. There's no particular reason why he ought to. He's notably not religious in any way, has not come from any culture, has never learned at any kind of school. Why is he like, how dare you compare yourself to Buddha? And I'm like, the fuck do you care?
I mean, I assume it's less I'm offended by this and more like, ah, I'm going to catch you in a thing.
Yeah. It's just another chance for him to be an asshole.
Pretty much.
That makes more sense, I guess.
So, yeah, that's that's
the
movie.
I also thought it was notable because it's the only time we get mention of a thing from, you know, Earth. Otherwise, yeah. It's like, it could be any time, any place. It's always has been and always will be. Also, Buddhism is a thing.
Yes, by name.
So, I just thought that was kind of an interesting moment. But yeah, that's the end.
Yep. So, let's go ahead and do our bests and worsts for the movie. Jeff, what was your favorite thing that happened in Circle of Iron?
I don't know. Probably the man in... No, that scene sucked. Hang on. Wait. All my favorite scenes sucked. That's a problem
wait
for me.
Wait a minute.
The martial arts fights before Cord started fighting.
Yeah.
Is that about right? Just when Roddy McDowell's just like, Pelele versus... Hoobadoo, you will fight. And then they do, and it's good, and it's a good fight. That was great, and I like that. And then Cord said something.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part. What about you?
Man, honestly, I kind of want to just say that was, I mean, almost certainly the best part of the movie was the actual for reals martial artist. But I also just have a very soft spot for Christopher Lee showing up in weird monk robes and being like, hey, smell this flower. Hey, don't be mean.
Chill out, dude.
Whoa, what are you doing?
What is this? Okay, you've been woefully misinformed about Monk Island.
Look, welcome to Fight Island. I think you'll find it different than you imagine.
Yeah, that's a real problem. It's nice to see Christopher Lee, so it is a nice moment.
But it's just funny to me
again,
that he's like, here, smell this flower. Wah! What are you doing?
But it does... It just, again, ends on Cord wandering away, like, just utterly convinced of his ineffable superiority.
Oh, yeah, that's why that's like, not my favorite thing. It's just the beginning of Z-Tan.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's just, that's one of my least favorite parts, is when Z-Tan, a peaceful, friendly person, makes him a reasonable offer, and he's like, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha, I will walk away, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. He's like, dude, just say no thanks. What the fuck? Why are you such an asshole?
Is that going to be your least favorite thing?
I mean, I would probably say my least favorite thing is the part where two guys agree that no one is at fault for the death of a woman that one of them murdered over the other one. Can I say that's my least favorite thing?
You certainly can.
I will. Because that part where they're just like, her death was an important lesson to me. Thank you for killing her so I could learn that you can kill stuff. We're fucking awful.
Yeah. The fact that he's like, oh, you don't come here in anger? No, I too have her death on my hands. Like, not really, and two,
certainly not in a way where you're going to do anything with that responsibility or guilt.
Yeah, you're not actually like, I don't know, sorry at all. You're just like, ah, I guess I've learned the important lesson not to fuck or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just trash. It's absolute. There's no respect paid whatsoever to the character of Tara, the woman who just gets murdered.
Yep.
That's just some horse shit, and there you go.
Yes, indeed.
You?
I'm going to say, you know, outside of that, one of my least favorite things in this is the David Carradine giving the lesson on the monkey, and then he goes to fight the monkey man, and it does not matter at all.
Yeah.
That was the kind of thing where I was like, oh, okay, I can see the setup for this movie now. You know, Carradine shows up as a monk, something happens, he gives a life lesson, and then that lesson becomes a thing he needs to know for whatever trial. All right, I understand that, and then no, it doesn't, and it's not actually that, and he never learns anything, and nothing matters.
No, the only thing that was redeemable about that whole sequence is that the flute guy gave us a big lesson on the monkey, thus inspiring the Traveling Wilbury song, Tweeter and the Monkey Man.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Deep pulls indeed.
So let's go ahead and rate the movie. We're each going to give this movie a rating from 0 to 5 to give us a total out of 10. Jeff.
1.5, I guess. The martial arts sequences are worth watching, but ultimately, who the fuck is this for?
Yeah.
Like, if Bruce Lee had been alive to make this, then this would have been probably a lot better than it is. It's self-indulgent. It doesn't seem to follow the lessons that I think Bruce Lee would have wanted it to. It's just bad. The music sucks. Everything sucks. 1.5.
Great.
You?
I mean, I think I'm going to go with a 1.5 as well, honestly. It just, I said it at the beginning, I don't know who this is for. If you're a Kung Fu fan, you're not going to enjoy this because it's just, we're going to spotlight the dude who can't do this. And then 90% of the movie is just an insufferable asshole laughing about how cool he is.
Oh, it's the worst. And that's exactly what it is. It's just this guy wandering around being like, I'm great. And, you know, I kind of, if you wanted to tell like a Journey to the West type of story where, I mean, ultimately, Journey to the West is not an easy story to explain to a Western audience because Sun Wukong is a fucking asshole and never stops being one all the way through the entire story. But they're just like, well, he's supposed to be. He's fucking monkey man. He sucks. He's a piece of shit. But he's the hero of the story. Fucking deal with it. That's what this is like.
It's difficult. It's honestly, like, you can watch this and it's not like you're going to be like, oh, I'm so bored, but you'll just be like, I don't know why I'm watching this.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much exactly where it's at.
So three out of 10 overall.
I hope we're not going to find out that this is like a super important text to some people and that we're being like crazy offensive.
Eh, fuck them. I don't care. Fuck everyone. This is my show, and I'll shit all over a movie if I want to.
Yeah, I feel like it could have been done in a better way. All right.
That is for sure true.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us for our review of Circle of Iron. We will, of course, be back in another couple weeks with more movie mastery. But if you want, you can join us over on patreon.com/systemmastery. If you want to support us, it helps us keep the show going. We get to do what we do and keeps the lights on and keeps food in our mouth. But as well, if you want to go on to the $5 level, you unlock our TV mastery. We are going through The Littlest Hobo right now in season 2, and it is absolutely bonkers and weird and just lovely in so many
very fun
strange ways.
Yeah,
and we've got a special guest for this episode. We've had two special guests so far, and we'll have more. It's just a cavalcade of fun times.
It turns out no one wants to watch season one of Smallville, but everyone wants to watch Littlest Hobo.
Oh, yeah. Well, Littlest Hobo is only like a 20-minute, 15-minute commitment rather than like an hour. And also, it's got a dog.
I feel like a lot of the first season is... No, wait. The first season of Smallville had almost no dogs. Never mind.
Almost zero dogs. It wasn't until like season three that he managed to get Crypto.
That's right. God. Okay. I remember that. Now I'm remembering that there's just no dog that season, and I'm disappointed even more.
Indeed. But you can join us on Patreon. Follow along with us while we're doing that. And of course, it unlocks a ton of other bonus content for you for all of our other shows. And patreon.com/systemmastery is also where, if you want to, you listen to all the stuff we do. You can get everything on one RSS feed. It's very convenient. So go ahead, check us out there. We will be back in 2 weeks with more Movie Mastery. And until then, you have a good one.